Thankful for the opportunity to be together tonight to pray for your blessings, pray for the Lord's blessings to be upon those things that we try to study tonight. I want to notice a chapter tonight, and recently as I was studying, I was noticing Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5. Now this is one of those there's three accounts in this chapter. And Matthew records these three events, and Luke records these three events. And what I've done is Mark covers most of it. You know, a lot of times Luke is good, being the doctor, he's good to have a lot of detail, perhaps more than some of the other writers. But in this particular instance, Mark gives us more detail than the other two. As a matter of fact, I was a little bit taken back by one of these occasions, and I'll get into that later, that Matthew really hardly even mentions what I've always thought was the main part of the story. And so I'll explain that in just a moment. But hope you found Mark chapter 5 by now. And these pages here, I took all three of them, and so I don't have to turn so many pages in case I want to look back and reference some of that. But Mark chapter 5. the way I look at this is three impossible problems. And the answer to each one is the only one that can provide the answer. Three impossible problems. You know, it's said in the scriptures, with men this is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. You know, the question was asked back in the Old Testament, is anything too hard for the Lord? Well, anything that's his will, he can do it. Nothing is too hard for him. If it's according to his will, he can do it. Mark chapter 5, three impossible situations, problems. The first one is the wild Gadarene, a man that was deranged. I mean, just mentally, he was possessed of demons. Many demons. You know, I don't mean to be light about this, but I think I've known some folks. I think I've actually met some people through the years that it just gave me a chill to look in their eyes. Just something about them just gave me a chill. And this man was possessed. Actually, his name was, when the Lord asked, "What's thy name?" they said, "Legion, for we are many." For men, that was impossible. But we'll see how the Lord deals with it. The second one that's brought up is a ruler of the synagogue. He had an impossible problem. His little girl was dying. Now, there's not too many places in the scriptures where you're going to find a Jewish leader going to Jesus and asking for help. But I'm going to tell you, if you got a problem like this, you'll go anywhere you think you'll find some help. Right? I mean, it was impossible for him. Two of the writers says she was dying. Matthew says she's dead already. That's an impossible situation with man. We'll see how Jesus handled it. And then in the midst of telling the story about Jairus and his daughter is a lady, a woman who had an issue of blood for 12 years. Been to a lot of doctors? Wasn't it? As a matter of fact, Matthew said she was worse. An impossible situation. Is it too hard for the Lord? No. All right. Now that I've given you that overview, maybe I can read through and Mark chapter 5. And they came over unto the other side of the sea into the country of the Gadarenes. Now, when you compare these three passages, or these three accounts of this, or at least in Matthew, Matthew doesn't say Gadarenes. Matthew says Gergesenes. Do we have an error in the scriptures? Well, on the map, those two areas are, the writers or the commentators tell me, they was about 12 miles apart. So, if they're 12 miles apart, and they lived, so if they were kind of in between, you know, I guess it's possible that they might have assumed they were, one was from, I don't know. But it's different, but it is two different places that are very close together on the map. So I don't have a problem with that, okay? And when he was come out of the ship, that is Jesus, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. Now here's another challenge. Matthew says there was two of them. Do you know why? I hope you do, because I don't. I don't. I've got some ideas, but they're just ideas. I've searched through the scriptures, all three of them, and there's nothing that would give me any concrete information as to why Matthew would say two and the others would say one. My idea, you know, is that maybe somehow referring to this man, when he was in the right mind, he was one person, and when he was experiencing that demon possession, maybe he would act like another. To me, that's about the closest thing I can think of without it actually being two people. And if it was literally two people, the other one is not mentioned again. So, and that's a possibility too, isn't it? But we're just speculating. All right. Now, this one met Jesus immediately as he came out of the ship. And then it begins to describe this man. Immediately there came to him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains. Wow. Not even with chains. Because that he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces, neither could any man tame him. Well, brother, I don't think I'd want to meet that man, daylight or dark, if he's got that kind of strength. And you realize it's not his physical strength, it's those demons. It's that demon possession. It's, and that ought to cause us to pause and consider. You know, those demons have power. And it evidently, and this is a manifestation of that. So this man is overpowered by these devils. Like I said, an impossible situation for him to deal with. And anybody that's had to deal with mental illness knows that it's one of the most difficult situations to deal with. And always night and day he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. But when he saw Jesus afar off. Now, picture this. And when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshiped him. What a difference. Luke tells us he fell down at his feet. Fell down at his feet. And cried with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God?" Now listen, that was not the man speaking. Those demons knew who Jesus was. And isn't it interesting that they fell down before Jesus? I think that's a little bit of a lesson right there for us. That even the demons know their subject unto him. We need to remember that. Even in times like this, when there's so much uncertainty around us, when there's so many things that are restrictions and changes, and it can be unsettling at times when you stop and really think about what's going on. I mean, we've never had anything like this just close down almost everything in this nation, not only in this nation, but around the world. It's crazy. If you think about it very much, it'll drive you crazy. But it's good for us to remember that even the devils are subject to our Lord. And he's the one that we can call upon for our help. He's the one that we can call upon for whatever we need, no matter what time of day or night, no matter what it is, he is able to supply that need because even the devils are subject unto him. I like that, don't you? Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God, they said, "I adjure thee by God that thou torment me not." Now, obviously, they're speaking through this man, all right? "For he said unto them, Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit. And he asked him, What is thy name? And he answered, saying, My name is Legion, for we are many." Many demons. Can you imagine? Just, I know you can't relate, but just try to imagine the kind of torment that this man must have been in, being possessed with many demons. "And he besought him much," that is, the man besought Jesus much, "that he would not send them away out of the country. Now there was there, nigh unto the mountains, a great herd of swine feeding. And all the devils besought him, saying, Send us into the swine, that we may enter into them. And forthwith Jesus gave them leave, and the unclean spirits went out and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea. They were about 2,000, and were choked in the sea." Imagine. "And they that fed the swine fled and told it in the city and in the country, and they went out to see what it was that was done. And they came to Jesus and see him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion sitting, clothed, and in his right mind, and they were afraid." Wait a minute. I would think that would be a great thing, wouldn't you? Maybe everybody doesn't think like I do, but I would think that would be a great thing. The man was sitting. See, he dwelt in the tombs. He roamed about at night. He cut himself in the tomb. And now the man is seated and clothed. By the way, one of the other accounts of this tells us that he wear no clothes. And in his right mind, what is there to be afraid of here? Think about it. Because you see, this is what got my part of what got my attention this morning. In reading Matthew's account of this, Matthew doesn't even say anything about the man being healed. except an expression that says what had been done to him. And I'm sitting there as I read that, and for the first time in my life, I looked at that and I said, wait a minute. I've always looked at this as the main lesson in this passage being the healing of the man, and Matthew almost doesn't even say it. Isn't that strange? I found it to be strange. But all three accounts of this tell us that the people of that region were afraid. And they begged him to leave. Really? Verse 16, and they that saw it told them how it befell to him that was possessed of the devil, and also concerning the swine, and they began to pray him to depart out of their coast. And when he was come into the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. All right, I'm getting ahead of myself here. They prayed that he would depart out of their coasts. Did you get that? They were more concerned about Jesus being there than they were the man that had the legion of demons. That kind of twists my brain. But obviously, since that's mainly what Matthew says about this. Oh, they talk about, Matthew talks about how the man was possessed and all that over in Matthew 8. But the main thing that he says, they ask him to leave. They prayed for he would depart from them. Evidently, this is an indictment on those. They seem to be more satisfied having a demon-possessed man in their presence than they did the Lord. I find that amazing. Strange. But that's got to be part of this lesson, because Matthew almost doesn't mention the man being healed. My goodness. Do you suppose we have any of that around us today? So it's still a valid lesson, isn't it? There's some places. Now, you know, as we go through these trials of this present day, my prayer every day has been for God's people to come out of this closer to the Lord. That we would get to the place where we would be humbled more. That we would be thankful more for what we do have. And that we would continue to trust the Lord more in the days ahead. Here was a people that would rather have Jesus leave than even a demon-possessed man. But brother, I'm here to tell you, there are people like that in the world today. Evidently, there's a lot of people like that in high places in the world today. You see how we've tried to push the Lord out of everything in the way of schools and the public arena? You see that? That spirit is alive and well today. It's not good, but it's strong in our world today, just like it was when a notable miracle had been done. When the demons had been cast out, not only were they cast out of the man, they were cast out into the swine, and the swine themselves ran down the cliff and into the water and drowned. Now, did that get rid of the demons? I doubt it. I don't know, but I doubt it. I doubt it. But we need to be aware, since the scriptures give us that lesson, we need to realize that was bad, but it's still around us today. All right, let's keep reading. Now let's finish up with this man who had been demon-possessed. And when he was come into the ship, he that had been possessed with the devils prayed him that he might be with him. Now that man, like it says, was in his right mind. Those people that prayed for Jesus to leave, they were not in their right mind. You know, and they, it doesn't even speak of them as being the ones demon-possessed. But the man who'd been healed, the man who God, by his power, the Lord Jesus, by his power, cast out those demons, that man wanted to be with Jesus. You know, it takes the same power, even for us, to want to be with Jesus. Same power. And thankfully, that same power is with us today. So what did Jesus tell this man? He wants to be with Jesus. What did Jesus tell him? Come on, let's go. I'm not trying to be light-hearted with the scriptures. But you know he didn't tell him that, did he? He said, go home to thy friends and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee and hath had compassion on thee. This is one of the reasons why I wanted Mark's account of this to go verse by verse, because Mark's the one that mentions that he and has had compassion on thee. As a matter of fact, this woman, when we get to her that had the issue of blood, we understand that she touched the Lord. Well, before I get into that, let me tell you, this man touched the Lord. The Lord had compassion on him. The Lord had compassion on his situation. The Lord had compassion on him and changed his world. This was an impossible situation for that man, but the Lord had compassion on him and healed him of his affliction and put him in his right mind. Isn't that a miracle? And every time God blesses someone by giving them his spirit, that's a miracle all over again. All right. And he departed. Now, that's what the Lord told him to do. Go home to thy friends and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee. Did he do it? You know, there's some folks that in the Bible that they've been told something and they didn't do it. Well, here's one situation where we can be thankful that he did. It says, and he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him. Exactly what the Lord told him to do. And all men did marvel. I love that, don't you? I love how it turned out, at least. The Lord had compassion on him and blessed him. All right? Now, it says that Jesus and his disciples, they got in a ship and went to the other side of the sea. All right? Verse 21. And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue. By the way, when there was much people gathered unto them, remember we said that the people of that region desired for Jesus to depart. They didn't want him there. They desired for him to depart. But on the other side of the sea, one of the writers tells us that they gladly received him. Oh, what a difference. What a difference when Jesus is gladly received. All right, so let's go on. And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet. The second impossible situation finds another one falling at Jesus' feet. The wild man, even though he was still possessed of demons, fell at Jesus' feet. This man, Jairus, now listen, not just a Jew, he was a ruler of the synagogue. That means he had a higher position above a bunch of the elders of the synagogue. And so, what is that? What do you think gonna, you know, don't you think he was a little concerned? Ordinarily, let's put it, he would have been very concerned about going to Jesus and bowing down. But like I said, when you're in enough trouble, you'll go wherever you have to for the help that you need. And that's where we find this man. He was in an impossible situation. As a matter of fact, we talked about the demon man being deranged. This man's desperate. Desperate. I think that's a good way to put it. He's desperate. He's a ruler of the Jews, but he's coming to Jesus. But you know, he's got some wisdom. Because Jesus can help him. Nobody else could. Here's another impossible situation. Here's how he describes it. He and besought him greatly, saying, "My little daughter lieth at the point of death." My little daughter lieth at the point of death. Luke says his only daughter. His only little daughter. Lieth at the point of death. Now, by the way, she's only 12 years old. Hang on to that thought, 12 years old. So he says, lieth at the point of death. He says, "I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live." I hear faith right there. I hear one that believes that Jesus is able to handle this situation. And yet he's a ruler among the Jews. But I hear faith in that. All right? And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. Now it's interesting how this is written. There's a story within a story here. We find Jairus has come to Jesus. He has a terrible problem. His little daughter, his only daughter, is about to die, and he's asking him to come and help. And he comes. But when we keep reading, we find that he's delayed. Now, while we go through this about the woman with the issue of blood, just remember, Jairus is waiting. And that adds a lot to the story when you understand that now that he's going to be dealing with something else, but Jairus is waiting. But you know, this is kind of like it was with Lazarus. They sent word to Jesus that Lazarus, whom thou lovest, is sick. And they wanted Jesus to come and heal him. But if you remember, Jesus didn't get in any hurry. Isn't that amazing? And the language that Jesus used, the disciples thought that he was asleep, and one of them even said, "Well, if he sleepeth, he do well." But the Lord said, "Lazarus is dead." But he said, "This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God." Just like this. This man is in desperate condition. He doesn't know what's going to happen. Jesus does. He doesn't know if he's going to have his daughter much longer. And so we find Jesus is going with him. He'd ask him to come and lay his hands on her, and she'd be healed. And he's going to do that. But not right away. You ever been in that situation? Praying for something, asking the Lord to answer your prayer, and answer your prayer, and answer your prayer, and he doesn't? We've all been there. Does the Lord not hear? Oh, he hears. He knows. But he answers when it pleases him. And in the way that pleases him. I could just imagine Jairus standing there shaking his hands, wanting the Lord to come on. But something else gets in the way. Verse 25. And a certain woman. Don't you love it the way the scripture says a certain man, a certain woman? Which had an issue of blood 12 years. How long had she been dealing with this? 12 years. Jairus had had his little girl 12 years. The joys that Jairus had. All that time, this woman had been dealing with her problem. You know, sometimes it's good for us to stop and consider problems that other folks have. Yeah. Maybe we'd have a little more compassion for some of the things that people... And even if we don't know the situation, if we see somebody that's kind of a short temper or whatever, maybe it's not just they're having a bad day. Maybe they've had a bad decade. Maybe life is hard for them. Maybe there's struggles that they're going through. I'm sure if you had asked Jairus, he would have told you, no, I want to go now. My little girl needs you now. But this certain woman who had an issue of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. Can you imagine having a condition that for 12 years it continues to get worse and worse and worse? And she'd been to many physicians, and she'd spent all she had. An impossible situation. The physicians of this world didn't have an answer. And when she heard of Jesus, came in the press behind him, and touched his garment. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be made whole. Matthew says the hem of his garment. She touched just the hem. Luke says the border of his garment. Just barely touching. Was that enough? I mean, she barely touches his clothes. She doesn't see, evidently she doesn't touch him physically. Oh, but she did touch him, didn't she? There's something real special here. And straightway. Now, if I didn't read any more right here, I believe I could say she touched him enough. Because she touched him with more than her finger. She touched him with faith, with trust. She touched his spirit with her spirit. Straightway, the fountain of her blood was dried up. Matthew says she was made whole. Luke says the fountain of her blood stanched. Can you tell me what that word means? Stanched. Now, we didn't say stank. You know, Martha was talking about Lazarus, and by now he stinketh. We're not talking about that. The fountain of her blood stank. Well, I've already told you. It all means the same thing. It stopped. What she had been dealing with for 12 years, when she spent all she had, and she was nothing bad. As a matter of fact, she was even worse. And yet, when she, by faith, reached out and touched. Now, he was thronged. There were other people around. Perhaps as all she could do was get her hand through the press and touch the hem of his garment. But it was enough. It was enough. Straightway, the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. Straightway. Immediately. The next verse, and Jesus immediately, knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned about in the press and said, "Who touched my clothes?" His disciples said unto him, "Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, who touched me?" And he looked round about to see her that had done this thing. Fearing and trembling, she fell down. Luke says, when she realized it was not hid, perhaps she thought in the throng she'd be safe and just reach far enough to touch the hem of his garment. There's no way he would know anything about what she had done. But virtue. This tells us the Lord knows everything. Virtue went out of him. It was that power that healed her. He called it virtue. She was made whole. Now, how was he touched? We know that she touched the hem of his garment, I'm assuming, with her finger. Her hand, finger, whatever. But is that all in how he was touched? Do you remember over in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15, we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. In other words, we have a high priest who can be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. I submit to you, he was touched more by the feeling of her infirmities than by the finger of her hand on the hem of his garment. Feelings of her infirmity. She had an impossible situation, but by faith, and I'm on safe ground there because he's going to tell her in a little bit how she was made whole. By faith, she reached out to him, and he was touched with the feelings of her infirmities. And I submit to you, it's the same way the wild Gadarene was touched. The same way Jesus was touched by him. The feeling of his infirmities. Isn't that amazing? Amazing. Impossible situations. And he, the only one with the power to heal. And so we find that she was healed. Jesus said, "Who touched my clothes?" Verse 32, "And he looked round about to see her that had done this thing." As far as we know, he didn't even know her, at least not have had met her, but he knew her, didn't he? This was a certain woman. He knew her, and he looked around and saw her. I don't think he had to keep asking. I think he knew who she was, don't you? "But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth." I like to point out there, as she's telling him all the truth, I wonder how long that took. Jairus is still waiting. "Lord, come on." You know? Jairus is still waiting. And she tells him all the truth. We know there was no reason for Jesus to get in a hurry. As a matter of fact, I doubt Jesus ever got in a hurry about anything. Ever. Nor ever will be. He's in complete control of what he pleases to do. Isaiah said he shall not fail, nor be discouraged. So there was no reason for him to get in a hurry. But I'm sure Jairus was in a hurry. I'm sure Jairus was urging the Lord. But she fell down before him. Here we've had two characters already. Well, all three, because Jairus fell down before him as well. All three of these fell down before the Lord. Two of them says in worshiped. Wow. "And he looked round about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down and before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague." Now, we know it was the power of God. We know that virtue went out of Jesus for this woman to be made whole, to be healed. But she could have sat at home. She could have looked at that throng of people and said, "Well, there's no reason for me to try." But she didn't. She reached out to Jesus and touched him, not only with her finger on the hem of his garment, but he was touched by the feeling of her infirmities. Jairus is waiting, right? His little girl was at the point of death. He's still waiting. Verse 35. While Jesus yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, "Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further?" Can you imagine? Matthew had said, in Matthew's account of this, Matthew had already said that she's already dead. Matthew 9. He says, "My daughter is even now dead. Come and lay thy hand upon her, and she shall live." Mark gives us a little different perspective. You know, all of these writers of the New Testament, now they wrote under inspiration. So it's right, but we have different perspectives. She did die. And so someone who's writing something after the fact may have just gone ahead and said that, and it's right, she did die. But Mark gives us this perspective that they brought the word, "Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further?" This is bad news. Can you imagine? Just think with me for a moment. Just imagine the hopelessness that Jairus must have been feeling at that point. But I submit to you tonight that at that point, Jesus was touched with the feeling of his infirmities. That from what we see happens here, Jesus had compassion on him and helped him. "Why troublest thou the master any further?" As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he saith unto the ruler of the synagogue, "Be not afraid, only believe." Don't you know that Jairus was sinking? Just like Peter when he walked on the water, but then he began to look at his troubles and he began to sink. And he said, "Lord, save." And the Lord reached out and lifted him up. This is kind of like what's happening here. When the Lord says, "Be not afraid, only believe," he's reaching out and keeping him from going under. "And he suffered no man to follow him save Peter and James and John, the brother of James." Here's another one of those verses where Mark is much more descriptive about just who these men are. Because you see, of the apostles, there was more than one James. But he tells us this is the James that's the brother to John. James and John, Boanerges, the sons of thunder. The James that was slain by the sword, not the one that wrote the book of James. He tells us that in just a few words, or helps us to understand which ones they are. "And he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeth the tumult, and them that wept and wailed. And when he was coming in, he saith unto them, Why make ye this ado and weep? The damsel is not dead, but sleepeth." I think there might have been a little bit of encouragement in Jairus when he said that. He'd already told him, "Be not afraid, only believe." Jairus had come to him and said, "Lord, you can come and lay your hands on her and she'll be healed." Well, he's coming. Now he had the word, the child had died. But the Lord said, "Be not afraid, only believe." Now he says she's sleeping. The Lord never said she was dead. Now, we know from our earthly perspective, she was. And I say that because Matthew said she was. So we know that's right. She wasn't just in a coma. No, she'd already passed. But they laughed him to scorn. That makes me fearful. Anybody at the word of the Lord to scoff and mock and laugh him to scorn. But is that much different from those people who wanted Jesus out of their coast? They seemed to be okay with a man that had many demons, but they didn't want the Lord around. And here's there's people laughing Jesus to scorn. Tonight, we can be thankful. God has blessed us with ears to hear, a heart to feel, faith to reach out to God and trust. Jairus had that too. Even though he's a ruler of the synagogue. And they laughed him to scorn, verse 40, but when he had put them all out, he taketh the father, Jairus, and the mother of the damsel, and them that were with him. Who was with him? James, Peter, and John. And entereth in where the damsel was lying. And he took the damsel by the hand and said unto her, Talitha kumai, which is being interpreted. I'm glad the scriptures interpreted that for us, don't you? Aren't you? Damsel, I say unto thee, arise. And straightway, there it is again. Just like with the woman with the issue of blood. And I'll say, just like with the demons that were cast out of the Gadarean. You see, this is not hard for the Lord. And we need to zero in on that. The power that he has to heal, the power he has to help, the power he has to deliver is not a challenge for him. He speaks and it's done. He wills and it's done. He didn't even have to go to Jairus' house, did he? He didn't have to. But here's a lesson. And straightway the damsel arose and walked. For she was of the age of 12 years. That's the first time Mark has told us she was 12. The other two started out telling us. And they were astonished with a great astonishment. Well, I guess so. We would have been too, wouldn't we? And he charged them straightly. Listen to this. And he charged them straightly that no man should know it. Her daughter had died. Jesus. Only Jesus. He's the only one that could have done that. He healed her. He raised her from the dead. And he says, don't tell anybody. I thought about that. Do you suppose Jesus having some compassion here for this man's position among the Jews. I mean, that would have destroyed his, and maybe it did, we don't know. But I'm just saying, he was a ruler of the synagogue. And for him to go to Jesus and fall down at his feet and beg for his help, and the Lord helped him, and the Lord healed his daughter. Now he's not supposed to say anything to anybody. You know, that's not the only time the Lord has said, not necessarily not to tell anybody, but do you remember another man, the Old Testament, Naaman the Syrian, had leprosy. He was a great man, a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. And long story short, when he came to Elisha, and Elisha told him what to do, and of course he pitched his fit, you remember? And a little maid said, well, Master, if he bid you to do some great thing, wouldn't you have done it? And the obvious answer to that is yes, he'd have done it or died trying. But he told him just to go dip 7 times in Jordan. Dirty Jordan. That's the way he looked at it. But when he dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, his flesh was like a child. He was healed. When he did what the Lord, what the prophet told him to do. What I'm getting at is this. After Naaman had been healed, he began to think, now I know there's a God in Israel. Now I know this is his prophet. And when I go back home, my master is going to lean on me when we go into the house of Rimmon, like we've always done, and bow down before that idol God. And Naaman said, in this thing, pardon thy servant. Do you know what that prophet said? Go in peace. He's going to have to go back some things that was different. It wasn't right. And he knew it. Now he knows it in his heart. It's not right. But the prophet told him, go in peace. Now Naaman did ask him for 2 mules burdens of earth. He wanted some dirt from that place. You know why? When he went home, he was going to build him an altar. And he was going to worship the true and living God. In spirit and in truth. I may be totally off base on why the Lord told them not to tell anybody. That's a possibility of his position. They laughed him to scorn. You know what we would have done going out of that house. We'd have looked at those folks that laughed him to scorn and said, you see? We'd have done that. I don't think the Lord did that. He's better than that. He knew what he was going to do all along. That's just the kind of thing that our Lord was confronted with as he bore our sorrows and carried our griefs throughout his ministry. So to the wild Gadarean who was healed, he told him, you go home to your friends and tell them how great things the Lord had done for thee. And he went and published it abroad. But to Jairus and his wife, he told them, don't tell a soul. I wish I could tell you exactly why, but I'll tell you this. All three of these touched the Lord with their infirmities. And the Lord had mercy on them, and had compassion on them and healed them. What about the woman with the issue of blood? He didn't tell her to go tell everybody. He didn't tell her not to tell anybody. I don't know. Maybe she was so shy and so withdrawn that she didn't want anybody. I mean, she wasn't the kind of person that would be telling folks. All she wanted to do was touch the hem of his garment. She didn't want to be seen. She didn't want to be heard. She didn't stop him in the way and say, "Wait, I got a problem." She came up behind him. Perhaps she was so meek. I don't know. But I know this. He was touched with their faith. He was touched with the feelings of their infirmities. Virtue went out of him, and he healed their afflictions. This is a great chapter. A great chapter. Three impossible situations for those people, and yet the Lord, who's able to do all things, was their helper. What a variety of needs. What a variety of help. What a great God we have. Even tonight, he's touched with the feelings of our infirmities. We can go to him with our needs even now. And as long as we're upon this earth, and as long as this earth remains, he's there to be the helper. He's our intercessor with the Father. He's the comforter. He's our advocate. He's our everything. He's touched with the feelings of our infirmity. Go to him. Trust him. Reach out to him. He's touched with the feelings of our infirmities. Anything you'd like to add to that?
That one with the wretched hand. Mm-hmm.
Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?
Yeah, but I think, and you're right, because Matthew or Mark said it one way and the other way. In one book, it said how he looked upon them because of the way. But he had compassion with just a little withered hand.
That's right.
And he did it on the Sabbath. I love